This is The People's Game. I'm Alan Minsky, and I'm joined now by Alexander Stile, who is the San Paolo Professor of International Journalism at Columbia. His most recent book is The Sack of Rome, Money Plus Media Plus Celebrity Equals Power Equals Silvio Berlusconi. He's also the author of an excellent book from the 1990s entitled Excellent Cadavers that looked at the role of the mafia in at that point contemporary Italian political scene. And he writes frequently for the New York Review of Books. Alexander Stile, welcome to The People's Game.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, Italy is at the top of global headlines right now as the defending world champions have crashed out of the 2010 World Cup tournament. When the draw came out a few months ago, Italy was considered very lucky to be in one of the weakest groups, and yet they did not make it past the first round. Now, the reason I want to speak to Alexander Stile about this is because, to my mind, and as I've said many times on this show, I've been a lifelong partisan for the Azzurri, something was askew about the selection of this team, the way the team had its relationship to a lot of other very talented soccer players who were excluded from the squad. And to me, it wasn't a one-to-one parallel with the sort of corruptions of contemporary Italian society, but it seemed to have something of that flavor. Alexander Stile is the English language journalist that I know who writes most eloquently about Silvio Berlusconi's Italy. So, Alexander Stile, have you looked at today's journalism in Italy, and what do you see there in terms of how the Italian press is responding to the defeat of the Azzurri?
Well, it's interesting because although people haven't read into it a kind of national, psychodrama, actually, as the French did, who have chosen to see the poor performance of their team as a kind of reflection of the disunity of a France increasingly multicultural but divided by race, ethnicity, religion. The Italians haven't yet read it in those terms, but it's clear that there are actually outlines of this defeat that do recall a big national problems, in the sense that the problems of this national team do seem to reflect strangely the problems of the country as a whole, in that the man who was called on to coach the team, Marcello Lippi, seems to have, sort of acted to kind of defend the status quo. He was a longtime trainer of the Juventus team and chose a very high percentage of Juventus players to the exclusion of many people who, that many fans felt were far more deserving. He also was kind of trying to preserve the core of the old team that had won in 2006 rather than renewing the team with fresh blood. And that's actually the kind of problem of the society as a whole. It functions very much as a kind of gerontocracy dominated by a series of powerful figures who kind of protect their fiefdoms and who, in many cases, block advancement, sort of the opposite of a meritocracy. So in some weird way, the failures of this team do seem to reflect the problems of society as a whole. I've written a lot of negative things about Silvio Berlusconi, but I don't think he can be blamed for this particular defeat. It's really a social problem as a whole about the way Italy operates, which is very little transparency, a handful of powerful people who make all the decisions and often make them in self-interested ways.
Actually, I have been surprised by the lack of outrage, just really, there's been considerable despair over Lippi's choices, but I've been surprised at how much people seem to accept it, because the talent pool, especially of offensive players who was left off the side, is unbelievable. I mean, I would put four or five players easily in Cassano, Francisco Totti, Mario Balotelli, even Luca Toni, as if you're an opposition defender, the four people that I just mentioned, they need to be contended with. They're taken as serious challenges. Nobody in the Italian front line even came close to that as far as defenders preparing for the match. And as you know, in all sports or all competitions, sometimes feints are as important as real effect. So even Tony, who trips over himself, the fact that he does require defenses to gravitate to him opens up space for other players. It was baffling, but again, it did seem, again, like the Italian political culture, it was accepted.
Yeah, well, it was a strangely that, I mean, resignation and acceptance of a kind of unhappy status quo is one of the characteristics of life there right now. And as well as weird resignation about the kind of unmeritocratic, unfair nature and way in which, you know, decisions of advancement are taken. The other thing that, is striking, of course, for people who've followed this situation over a period of years is that soccer in Italy has been a big barometer of the way the country as a whole operates. It's become increasingly an important part of Italian life, more so than in past decades, perhaps because of television and the increased televisation of soccer, and it evokes powerful sense of identification among Italians, and that may contribute to the reluctance to criticize too strongly. But it was interesting, the comments that I saw were sort of saying, okay, now it's really time to clean house, and the rhetoric is sort of a little bit like what you hear in the political realm. And it's very striking that in Italy, soccer is one of the few things that really unites the country. In you know, Italy is going through a period of time where northern regions are contesting the control of the central government over the northern regions of the country, and soccer is one of the few moments in which Italians feel fully Italian. The leader of the Northern League, which has sort of sought autonomy from the rest of Italy and even separation from the rest of Italy, had to kind of publicly apologize and say publicly that he hoped that the national team won. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of this strange overlap between politics and soccer there.
Well, and of course, fans of global soccer know that Silvio Berlusconi owns one of the two traditionally leading sides in Italian soccer right now. Inter Milan has done exceptionally well for the past 5 years, but the two truly dynastic clubs are Juventus, again, that Lippi is so closely related to, and AC Milan that Berlusconi owns. So Berlusconi not only has owned, the Italian side that has won the most European championships and won a number of them while Berlusconi was the head of the club, but he actually has named his political party Forza Italia after the national soccer cheer. So there again is this relationship between politics and soccer, especially as it relates to a nationally unified culture, because things are quite fragmented along the north and south.
One of the things that gave Berlusconi sort of national name recognition before he entered into politics, being the president of the at that time winningest soccer team in the country, made him a national celebrity and a hugely popular figure, along with being the owner of the three largest private TV stations. But it gave him total name recognition, and one of the things that struck him, Berlusconi, that is, when he would attend soccer matches, sometimes he would bring prominent politicians with him to these soccer matches because they were happy to be, you know, have great seats at an important soccer match. And the crowd would rush toward him, and they'd walk right by these politicians who were the people who were actually running the country, and they would refer to Berlusconi as Mr. President because he was the president of Milan. That to them was a greater honor than being president of the republic or prime minister. And suddenly Berlusconi realized that the popularity that he had amassed through soccer actually gave him political viability. And so when he went about constructing a political party, he used a lot of the rhetoric and the nomenclature of soccer in launching his political career. When he announced that he was running for office, he used the language of sort of entering the pitch, as they would say in England, you know, entering the field, the soccer field. So, and as you mentioned, adopted as his party name the national soccer cheer, and he you know, the Italian soccer team is the Azzurri, the Blues. And you know, his political party are also the Blues, and so it's a weird blending of soccer culture with political culture. but powerful on a popular level.
I'm talking with Alexander Stila here on The People's Game. He is the São Paulo Professor of International Journalism at Columbia. His most recent book is The Sack of Rome, Money Plus Media Plus Celebrity Equals Power Equals Silvio Berlusconi. We're talking about Silvio Berlusconi, who's in, what is this, his third time as the head of state in Italy, as the prime minister?
Third time as head of state, and he's been sort of the dominant figure since 1994.
Right.
With sometimes out of office, but has been in office more than he's been out.
Well, it was important for me as a traditional fan of the Azzurri, and I know in many respects this is a petty relationship between politics and soccer, but he was not the prime minister. It was Romano Prodi in 2006 when Italy won, and I actually felt better about rooting for Italy at that moment, and clearly that team was going to be competitive in a way that this team was not this year, much stronger side. I felt so much better about rooting for them with Berlusconi out of power because Berlusconi couldn't wrap himself in the success of that. Going back to the 90s, though, I do want to point out again that Berlusconi's teams in AC Milan, they weren't just good. They were really amongst the greatest club sides in the history of the sport. Their success in the early 90s was unbelievable. I mean, it's one of the top five club sides for a stretch of years of any team in the history of the sport. And Fabio Capello, the current manager of England, someone under a lot of fire, was the manager of that side at the time. So 2006, Italy won the World Cup. And again, the absolute explosion of national euphoria was just something that I don't know if people can imagine it if they've never witnessed anything like that. But I was once in northern Italy when they had won a match, just a match in 2002. I think their first match. I was the only time I was ever there for a World Cup match against Ecuador, and the whole city of Bergamo just exploded. People ran out in the street, started kicking soccer balls across the street in this sort of joyous carnival spirit. 2006, it was amazing. And yet they won in 2006 amidst this intense soccer scandal. And for, again, fans of the sport, it was sort of uncanny because the last time they had won the World Cup in 1982, again, Italian soccer was immersed in a terrible scandal. They seem only to be able to win when they're immersed in a scandal.
Well, it's hard to know about that. But what that scandal does show you, which is really, there were a lot of very troubling aspects to it. Some of your listeners may not have followed all the ins and outs of it, but some of the things that came out in the course of these investigations were that particularly some of the most powerful teams had a grip on, some of the empires who officiated matches and managed to get favorable officiating and win some games that they shouldn't have done. And it was obvious that they enjoyed a kind of position of privilege that was, obviously completely improper. The head of Juventus, but when he was questioned, he insisted that Berlusconi's team also, that they were simply playing catch-up because Berlusconi's people had other people in their pocket. But what was very disturbing was the sense that Italian soccer functioned like a lot of other parts of Italian life, which is with corruption and unfairness playing an oversized role, that people didn't really know what to trust because they felt they were always playing with a stacked deck, and it turns out that in many cases there were. I don't know if it's true, but when I was in Perugia a couple of years ago, someone there was telling me that some of the players, took bribes to throw some match, but then the coach had taken a bribe to do it the other way, and so they ended up losing. Even just ordinary fans, these are kind of rumors, but the idea that you don't even know, playing to win or not is a very depressing situation, and it has to eventually kind of trickle down into the way people play, even in international matches like this.
Well, Serie A's status these past few years has declined precipitously versus the Spanish League and the English League. While it's true an Italian side, Inter Milan, won the European Championship with the greatest global coach, Jose Mourinho. Well, he left after he won, number one. Two, while he was at Inter Milan, he actually spoke about how he loved Inter, but was not in love with Italian soccer and didn't seem to care much for Serie A. The stands aren't filled. the spectacle of Italian soccer on the weekends. It's still, the stands are filled almost exclusively with men, which is true of most of European soccer, but that's no longer true in, for instance, the British Premiership. It's become a more inviting and less hooliganish environment in England and Spain, whereas Italy is rough. And the league seems to be declining, and again, it seems to parallel a country that seems to have stagnated, to held on to its tradition of corruption. In fact, gripping to it desperately, it seems, in the embracing of Silvio Berlusconi. So I suppose to wrap and to maybe, in a sense, let the soccer element sort of fade into the background, just like the 2010s version of the Azzurri is now fading fast into memory, very unmemorable soccer team. Let me ask you two questions. What do you make in the most sort of macro, I mean, maybe you can't give a 3-minute answer to this, but in the most macro historical sense, the fact that Italy had this great rise of prosperity in the post-war years up through, say, the mid-1980s, the country seems to have stagnated, and part and parcel of that seems almost to be a sort of recommitment to corruption.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one of the things that's very striking, if you look at the economic numbers, Italy was one of the fastest growing countries in the world from the post-World War II period into the 80s and even into the early 90s. Corruption grew a great deal in the 1980s for a bunch of reasons I'll spare you. But a system became entrenched that increasingly, because there wasn't prosecution of corruption, there was no sort of punishment for it, and people became more and more brazen about creating patronage machines that involved a lot of self-enrichment. And then you see growth of Italy drop dramatically in the 1990s. Italy was briefly surpassed England in the early 1990s in terms of the size of its GDP, and it's now 20% smaller than Britain in terms of GDP. And there are a number of things that I think explain it. One, with the creation of the European Union and the dropping of all sorts of tariff barriers, you couldn't really hide anymore. A lot of the inefficiencies of the Italian system were exposed by that. And whereas some European countries that had invested in high-tech industries, the Italians were working in, you know, things like making shoes and furniture and clothes that could be made more cheaply in many cases in Asia. So they were more exposed to competition from Asia. And once they had entered into the European Union, they couldn't devalue it, their currency any longer, which is what Italy did for years. Whenever they got into trouble, they would devalue the lira, which is why if you traveled to Italy before the creation of the euro, you were always dealing in, you know, millions of lira instead of, you know, hundreds of dollars. And so this was a strategy that boosted exports and made Italian goods cheaper overseas. So those options were taken away by the unification of Europe, and a lot of the problems of the economy were exposed by globalization and the economic unification of Europe. So that's a part of it, and a bigger part of it is that as a society they didn't prepare well for the future. I mean, for example, Italy has one of the lowest percentages of university grads among industrialized countries. Countries like Spain, you know, which started farther behind, it was a dictatorship until the mid-1970s, greatly expanded its university system and now has a higher percentage of its population with university degrees. And Italy, instead, has not done that. It invests very little in research and development. It has a very small percentage of, you know, patents and things like that that are kind of indicators of innovation in the society. And in that sense, it's a sort of return to where we started. It functions too much like a gerontocracy and too much like a series of sort of feudal networks where a handful of powerful people control a lot of resources and prevent people from entering into their domain and can control those fiefdoms in a kind of top-down way, and it suppresses innovation, suppresses change in society. And so Italy has become a much more stagnant society, and it shows in the economic numbers. And perhaps it's too much to read into a soccer match, mm-hmm. but you see some of the same elements, you know, strangely enough, in the way this team was put together and the way it performed.
And then the final question, not immediate, but the near future, how does it look in the near future for Silvio Berlusconi? Is he pretty much locked in the center right, locked in after all they control
well,
so much
know,
of the media?
The weird thing is that despite a kind of string of scandals that would have normally knocked five politicians out of office forever, Berlusconi, despite the rather rocky performance of the Italian economy and all this other stuff, is still the strongest leader on the scene. You know, part of the problem of having somebody who controls all the television stations on top of running the government is that there's not that much room for other figures to emerge. And so I wouldn't expect, you know, you know, while being a critic of Berlusconi, have always said, be careful in betting against Berlusconi because he's incredibly powerful and incredibly determined, energetic figure, things that, you know, most people would cause most people to throw in the towel and say, who needs this kind of aggravation? That doesn't work with him. He seems to thrive on crisis and has a kind of penchant for creating crisis. So I don't see that changing. His term would last till 2013, I believe. Mm. I wouldn't hold my breath till then. Then things will get very interesting. I think there will be a desire, since he will be in his, late 70s by then, there will be a desire for renewal, even in the center-right that is dominated by him. And there may be problems before that, because his principal ally within his coalition, a man named Gianfranco Fini, is challenging his leadership to some degree, and there's a big stalemate over there over a wiretapping law which Berlusconi would like to pass, and which would basically make the publication of wiretaps a criminal offense by newspapers and journalists, and involve putting journalists in prison, in fact, for doing that, because Berlusconi keeps having embarrassing conversations that he's conducted, published in the press, that cause him a lot of aggravation. It's not clear Fini may break with him over this, and this could lead to a government crisis if that does happen. But at the moment, I wouldn't be betting against him.
And I do want to let you go because I have to move on in a second. But Fini comes out of the former fascist party. He, however, has positioned himself in a way where that doesn't taint him as a national politician, or is it just national politics have moved so far that they embrace
fascists? You know, Fini, who does have a past as a head of a neo-fascist party where he spent his youth and 30s, has over the last 15 years moved very consistently and determinedly toward the center. And there are a lot of people, people that I know who might normally vote center-left, who are, you know, look favorably on Fini because he has taken very moderate positions on a number of positions over a number of years. It doesn't seem to be, a quick temporary change. He's also, you know, gone to a great trouble to reassure the, for example, quite popular in the Jewish community in Italy, small as it is. You know, went to Israel and apologized to Israel over the contribution to fascism, to the Holocaust, and things like that. So it's hard to know whether that's a sincere kind of conversion, but it does seem to be a very consistent one that he's pursued with a lot of determination over the last 10 years, remaking himself politically. And so he may have a role to play in terms of the the kind of figure of the center who may be tip Italian politics one way or the other, toward the center right, the center left. There are a lot of people in the center left who are kind of privately, playing footsie with Fini and trying to get him to break away from Berlusconi in order to form a different kind of government.
And the legacy of the great Italian post-war left, it's pretty much just consigned to the dustbin of history at this point?
Well, it's in very bad shape. I think it's a long discussion, but I think that they, the former communists split at the time, and the majority of the old Communist Party decided to become a kind of social democratic party that's whose positions are, let's say, rather similar to the Democratic Party in this country, quite centrist. But they haven't really figured out how to kind of establish a new identity. And, it's difficult in general in this particular moment in Europe, in which you have, governments contemplating major austerity measures and things like that, to understand what kind of vision you can give a center-left party that is going to excite people. To have a center-left party that just says, okay, it's time to tighten our belts and raise the retirement age, whereas somebody like Berlusconi says, I'm going to make you all as rich as I am, and we're going to kick all these terrible immigrants out of the country too. Those are issues that, for better or worse, appeal to something emotional in the electorate, and the left doesn't have a kind of emotional appeal to make to its electorate at the moment. And so I see that as a problem.
Generations of soccer players only have 10-year careers, maybe 15 years at the top, and it seems like the Italians have a lot of players on their national side that were in their 15th or 16th year this year. It'll necessarily have to renew itself, and hopefully that can be the case for Italian politics as well, though that seems like a little bit more of a long shot right now. Alexander Stile, I want to thank you so much for joining us on The People's Game. And Alexander Stile is the San Paolo Professor of International Journalism at Columbia. His most recent book is The Sack of Rome, Money Plus Media Plus Celebrity Equals Power Equals Silvio Berlusconi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.